68 outside, keeping us warm in the studio from Kingston Wealth Management, John Rudy and Chris Rudy, and telling us about the ups and downs of the market numbers. It seems like every time you two come here, it's great news and everything's fine, and about 5 minutes after you leave, something crashes.
It's always good when we're here.
But by time you come back, the market has recovered. So we had some ups and downs since the last time we talked with your smiling faces from Kingston Wealth Management. Where are we at now?
Well, it's been up for the most part, Susan. I think Chris can talk and elaborate a little bit more about that. There's been a few days here and there. I haven't even looked today, Chris, because we don't make a habit of getting too intimate with the intraday moving. But I think yesterday, the day before, was a really good day in the markets. And what have you been seeing for the last week?
Yeah, I mean, I think the volatility has started to return in a small amount. You know, we've seen a couple 1% moves to the up and to the down. And I think that that's only natural that we're going to start to see as the year progresses a little bit more volatility reintroduced to the markets. But, you know, off a little bit from where we were, maybe the highest point at this point this year, but still very good year, very solid so far, and a lot of indicators to say that it'll probably keep on going that way.
Has there been any big headlines in the money news
causing this new
volatility?
Well, I read this morning, it's kind of interesting, we talk about all the naysayers who have been out there now for the last 6 or 7 years, going into 8 years, and I saw an article this morning, Chris, that Wall Street bankers warn that the, you know, end is near, and I don't know. It's reckless, really, to make those kind of forecasts and those kind of statements. Doesn't mean they're not going to be right once in a while. I mean, eventually, yeah. Chris, I think, mentioned a week ago, we're going to have some, you know, downturns. We're going to have corrections someday, but, you know, to make a blanket statement that they're looking at things that are showing that, you know, this market is now top heavy and those kind of things. So that's a worrisome statement in it, Chris, when you see that.
Yeah, and I think it all just goes into try to playing on people's fears, which unfortunately we know, whether it's predicting bad weather or predicting, you know, political turmoil or anything, to try to get your attention. Because if you say, hey, everything's great, go on, live your life, people won't watch, people won't read your news. So unfortunately, you know, that's something that we have been fighting and probably will continue to fight is what's out there in the media and financial journalism, if you can call it that. It's not very responsible. And, you know, one thing I tell people all the time is they say, well, I was watching CNBC. I say, please don't. You know, it most of the stuff that's on there, you know, if you like it for entertainment purposes, great, watch it for that. But don't take it as gospel by any stretch, because they have a vested interest in keeping you watching. So, you know, watching it with that, with those kind of tinted glasses, I think is very helpful.
I think the inability, Susan, to get the policies enacted that I think that the president, that this administration was hopeful to get going on health care, on tax, on several things along those lines, could be detrimental in the long term if we don't get some of those things done. Nobody's going to be able to predict that. But it's disappointing that we're not further along on the infrastructure. There's so many things that could be done to take what I think is a very growing economy right now. As a matter of fact, Chris, I think I saw some projections by the Fed that this next quarter could be, I think they said, in excess of 3 GDP. So there are a lot of positives that are out there, but I think if you could ever get off dead center and really get some things done, that would certainly, I think, be more than likely be an impetus to spur more development, more growth, maybe more growth in the markets even. But without that, there is that scenario where you could see the conditions be more fruitful for some type of a correction down the road.
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit on the big one there. If they can, when they come back legislatively here in the fall and do anything with tax reform to kind of help the middle and lower class workers, corporate tax rates is a big thing. I think that would be a big spurring point to maybe take that next leap forward. If they don't get something with that done, you know, I think you'll just kind of continue to see that, you know, less than 3% GDP, continue to be slow growth, you know, slowest economic recovery that we've had coming out of a long-term downturn recession. But, you know, it's slow and steady. We'd like to see it go a little bit little bit quicker. I think a lot of the budgetary projections are predicated on a lot more growing economy, 3% or more. So anything they can do to kind of help guide things in that way and remove any kind of headwinds, I think will help everyone.
Speaking of budgeting, we're always talking about planning ahead. I'm Susan Saunders with our friends from Kingston Wealth Management. They're here every Wednesday from 10 to 11 a.m. to give us free monetary advice and always available for your phone calls at their office instead of during the show because we've kind of pre-planned our strategies for this next hour. But as people are always trying to plan ahead for what it's going to cost them in the future, let's just look ahead to next year. Mm-hmm. Do we have any idea when we're going to find out numbers of what some of those health plans are going to cost since we haven't had a major turnover of the current policies and, you know, the Affordable Health Care Act is still in place. There's been rumors that it could go even higher next year.
It could go higher. Some of the numbers that I'm hearing bandied around for the state of Illinois is that they've been using north of 40%. That would be tragic. I think on top of what happened with the Obamacare numbers last year, Chris, in Illinois, I know mine personally went up about 40%+ from the previous year. So I think, Susan, it's a great point. I don't know that the numbers are hard and fast right now for what we're going to see nationally, but the trend is not going to be good. It's going to be going up. There's no question about it. You've got less insurers out there than we had a year ago, and it's getting less all the time. Chris, I don't see an answer for that right now, but it's clearly problematic for folks who are going to have to figure out a way to what are they going to give up if they're going to have to spend more money on health care. Something's got to give.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, again, another thing that for this fall, hopefully that we can come to some resolution on it and get a change moving, because I think everyone can agree with no changes. The overwhelming likelihood is that those rates are going to continue to rise. We're going to have less insurers, as you pointed out. And really where that starts to hurt people is, well, that's less money I can put into my 401k. That's less money I can put into my IRA to save for retirement because I've got to cover my upfront costs. I mean, everybody needs, mm-hmm. you know, medical care and hopefully medical insurance. So having to spend your money on those dollars, you know, there's only so many to go around for everybody. And if we can try to make some changes to alleviate those immediate expenses and pressure so people can help save for their future, again, all the better.
And the real frustrating part of that, Susan, as you know, what they're talking about with these rates is just the premium rates for the most part. But when you now take into consideration, and I use myself for an example, I've got now a $5,000 out-of-pocket before mm-hmm. any insurance coverage even kicks in. So theoretically, for the most part, I'm self-insured up until unless there's something, you know, much larger that were to happen. Doesn't take much nowadays to go north of $5,000. But
no, but those, you're self-insured probably for $10,000 to $12,000, yeah, before you've even gone to the doctor.
Those routine doctor visits, things of that nature, you know, the average family, when they're looking at those kind of numbers and they're paying the big premiums to start with, and now they got to sort of figure out, okay, if my child gets sick, if my child has an injury, if something goes, I got to go to the emergency room. You know, those are dollars on top of that. So this system is—it's a horrible, horrible system. This health plan that I'm on, but yet that's what's there. I mean, that's the best of what I can get. So it's very frustrating. It's not necessary. If you can't encourage some competition one way or the other, whether that's an overhaul of the current plan, whether it's a, you know, I don't know whether or not they'll ever get around to dismantling the plan the way it is. Maybe now's the time to really take a look at it and say, okay, let's just try to fix what we got the best we can. Wouldn't be my choice, but at this point in time, something's got to get done because the status quo, as Chris mentioned, is just crippling folks. And it does have a potential to really put the brakes on an economy that I think has a lot going for it.
Yeah, and I think you can even extrapolate that out to something that we're seeing with clients and people that approach us about retiring. You know, the idea of retiring at, you know, 60 or 62.
Oh, that's such a sexy thought, yeah, but I don't think it's realistic anymore.
While attractive, really creates, you know, we're looking at if you've got, you know, anywhere between 3 to 5 gap years in there before you can be eligible mm-hmm. for Medicare. Some of those individual insurance policies that you could deplete some serious resources quickly. in a very quick amount of time. So, and you look, well, what's the impact of that? Well, folks are staying at their jobs longer just to keep the health insurance. Well, generally those are higher paid employees. Mm-hmm. So it's more expenses for the company, not only in healthcare insurance costs, but also in salary wages. It's keeping younger workers from entering in. So now you have folks living at home with their parents a little bit longer. So you can see how all these things are interrelated. So getting some solutions, I think, really will alleviate pressures up and down the age and work spectrum.
About this time of year, I start really looking forward to traveling out of the country in January. I'm going to Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always curious about the value of the U.S. dollar.
Yeah.
That's how it affects me, is because I know my travel dollar can go farther when the U.S. dollar is high. Where are we at?
Well, the U.S. dollar is not as strong as it was maybe 4, 5, 6 months ago. I think it's fluctuated a little bit. I saw against the euro, Chris, we were about 86 cents on the dollar or to the euro. Clearly, we've had times when it's been worse. There's no doubt about that. But there has been a little bit of a tendency lately, Chris, for a little bit of a weakening of the U.S. dollar. Are you seeing that? And maybe can put your finger on maybe what a little bit of that. It's not horribly problematic, but it's not as good as it once was.
Yeah, you are. I think for me personally, a lot more gets made out of the relative strength of the dollar versus other currencies as too much of an indicator of other things to come. Obviously, the strength of the dollar is always relative to what? Relative to what other country's currency. The idea being a weaker U.S. dollar makes our goods more available for folks to buy. If it's stronger, it's harder. So it's harder for American companies to sell their products in outside markets. But at the same time, you know, there's good things about having a strong dollar as well. But people like to say that if it's too strong, it could hurt our local economy. It could, but it's always going to be something that fluctuates. There's always going to be people that make a case for one way or the other, because if it gets too weak, then you get the people start coming in and saying, well, you know, the dollar's no longer the global
standard,
the global currency, and we're going to be replaced by. I just don't see that happening in any near or even moderate term.
We're going to take a short break, and then we're going to come back. Interest rates, I've noticed a lot of the credit card applications in the mail have been offering me not so much 0% the way they were for a while. Now they're offering me like 1 and 2%. Hey, wait a minute. We'll talk oil prices and more with John Rudy and Chris Rudy from Kingston Wealth Management after this.
Did you miss an interview? Online, on Twitter, on Facebook.
WJBC and WJBC.com.
Money, 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 money. Everybody wants some money. And if you got some money, you want to make some more money. And if you don't have any money, you want to find out where to find the money. Well, that's what we talk about in its entirety here with our friends from Kingston Wealth Management. We don't talk just to the wealthy. We talk to the people who want to be wealthy and find you ways to get there. Today, it's John Rudy and Chris Rudy. You got the whole team. We, you know, always want to say hi to Mike Flaherty and Kevin Kingston and
Vicky,
and Mr. Leisman and everybody that's working at Kingston Wealth Management. You can learn more about them at KingstonWealthManagement.net. And they sponsor this hour every Wednesday. And I have learned when to get anxious and when not to. I'm not anxious about money right now, but I will notice small things that I never noticed before, the education I got from this show, like the advertisements that are coming into my mailbox saying, let's give you a new credit card. The interest rates seem to be changing on those spectacular offers. Not so spectacular.
Well, I think on the credit card side, you're right. And part of that is because I think these banks have recognized that consumers are buying right now. Consumers are spending money, and they're not averse to going into a little bit of a debt, maybe not greatly, but I still think the bottom line, even with any of those cards, is if you pay them off on a monthly basis, you know, it doesn't matter what the interest rate are for the most part. And there are a few cards that are a little bit different than that. But the bottom line is don't keep a balance, right, Chris? I mean, you really want to make sure that those balances are taken care of at the end of each month.
Yeah, obviously that's the goal. And, you know, unfortunately that not everybody's able to do that. And in some circumstances, if you have those initial opportunities, like you pointed out with a new card, sometimes it's 15, 18 months of, you know, 0% interest, then obviously it kicks way up. You don't want to carry too much, but at the same time, I know a lot of people get by because they use a little bit of credit.
Now,
you know, if you do it smart and you do it responsibly, it can really help a lot of families who, you know, there's only so many dollars to go around. And if you carry a little bit of a balance, obviously not ideal, but if you do it the right way, but unfortunately you can, the wrong way creeps in way too quickly.
Best laid plans.
Yes.
Always with the credit card. I'm going to use this credit card for the miles it's going to earn me, or the money back.
If I just spend $2,000 over the next 3 months, I got all these goodies. Well, I think Chris is right. People do use them, but again, I think you guys recommend to folks try to get those balances paid off as quickly as possible, because you can turn in a situation can go really bad fast if you get hooked in that I've only got to pay $48 a month deal, and knowing that most of it's going towards interest, and that's not a good sign. I will say one thing about interest rates, so in general, and Chris can kind of verify that, because I think you're going through looking at doing a refinance right now on a residence. Rates have gotten, and actually look like they're actually getting better on some of the 15, 30-year terms.
Yeah, we've seen actually, you know, through, I think, a lot more outside forces that are things going on in the world, that we're seeing a flood into the U.S. bond market, which is, you know, keeping our 10-year Treasury rates maybe lower than even the Fed would like them to be. So I don't know if that's going to precipitate another interest rate rise here by our central bank before the end of the year. But yeah, actually rates are going down a little bit from maybe where we saw they were going 6 months ago. So still a very great opportunity out there for folks looking to
And you bought your house, though, in the last 2 years. So already another refinance within 2 years.
Yeah. But, you know, there are just a lot of mitigating factors. You know, I think in Champaign we've seen property values come up a little bit. They're doing a lot of building. We're adding some new jobs, and actually Carle Hospital's building a pretty big campus out on the west side of town that I think has spurred that a little bit. Rates coming down a little bit help as well. So obviously they're always a case-by-case basis to go through, because the one thing when we talk about refinancing your house is making sure that the closing costs that are involved in, don't take away any potential savings that you might have. So again, while it sounds great and we still think there's a lot of opportunities out there for folks to take advantage of lower rates, maybe lock in if you haven't done so yet, maybe you thought you missed the boat, it may be coming back a little bit. But making sure that you really do look into the pros and cons of everything.
Before we get to part two of our discussion today, which will be a retirement checklist that can save you a fortune, you want to take notes and be ready for that after the news. Tell me what we know about oil.
Well, briefly, the good news is that several other countries now are now buying our energy products. And I think it bodes well for folks living in the Northwest that may have been a little bit flat for a while. I think the production they're going after it again, but it's nice to see that we're going to be exporting more than maybe what we have been in the past, and I think those are good signs. Locally, still we're in that sweet zone between 210 and 239. I mean, just kind of been really stuck in that pattern. So I don't see anything big changes on the horizon there, Chris, at least what we see now.
No, I mean, I think the overwhelming trend will continue to be that America becomes a net exporter of petroleum products. Hard to believe that, 10, 15 years ago we were saying, well, is America going to run out of oil, or are we going to, globally run? With the advances of science and the ability to kind of pull these things out of the ground now, I think those fears are getting smaller and smaller.
All right, we've got more to come with John Rudy and Chris Rudy from Kingston Wealth Management. But first, I'll hit the right button there. Thank you very much, Greg Hoblib. I'm Susan Saunders in with our friends from Kingston Wealth Management. John Rudy, Chris Rudy representing today as we are talking about all things markets, ups and downs and sideways. But the goal of this segment every Wednesday here on WJBC is to start looking towards a retirement, because that golden parachute is rarely, if ever, offered anymore at the end of your working experience. And it's only been in the last couple of years that I've really realize that retirement is a lot closer to me than the beginning of my work life. I've gone over the hump and I'm on the downhill slide into retirement, even though it seems like it's far, far away. If you don't start planning now, things can go wrong. Tell me about this new checklist you brought into us.
Yeah, I think the guys have a checklist that we kind of formulate for clients and try to go through some things with them to address some issues, but we thought we'd pick out several of them. Maybe I've got about 8 or 9 here, Chris, that we can talk about. But I think it really, when you look at the checklist, I think one of the things that you really have to do, each family has to define what retirement is. Do you want to travel? you know, how much you're going to spend on travel each year.
A lot.
Yeah. Are you going to move? Are you going to, you know, is that going to impact your financial life? Are you going to be a volunteer? Are you going to still work? Chris, I'm assuming those are things that you kind of talk with your folks about when you sit down for some type of a pre-planning meeting.
Yeah, man, that's really the main focus, or hopefully it should be the main focus, because that's really what's going to, you know, define your lifestyle after you stop working. So anything beyond your retirement life, not just financially, but as you point out, socially, family issues, what kind of lifestyle are we going to be, you know, winter in Florida or Arizona and back up here to see family? And then, you know, backing in from all those things, am I going to work at all just as a hobby, or like you say, volunteer? Is there going to be any type of supplemental income in retirement? You know, defining those things first. And what we tell people all the time is that you're really not going to know until you're in it. You can do your best to plan. You can do your, you know, you can start out with a plan. But more often than not, that does change over the first 18 to 24 months of your retirement, because it's such a different, it's just a different reality. You know, you've been used to working for 30, 40 years, and now you've got all this time. And, you know, some people, we say they have no problem filling their time. Others are like, I can't sit at home. You know, I have to find something, an outlet. So defining those objectives, or at least trying to outline them, and then, you know, defining them as you do, is important.
It's a great first step, Susan. And then I think you get into the nuts and bolts of the things. And one of the things that I'm at that period right now, and taking a look at the next 5-10 years, and if your health and everything holds out, great. But one of the things that you have to consider, Chris, and I know you guys do that, is do you still need life insurance? I think there's a point, there's some things that you have to kind of look at in your own family situation. But that life insurance is a cost that I think there are scenarios where some folks can do without it based upon what they might have else going on in their assets.
Yeah, obviously. Insurance is the first thing a lot of young families start off with. Hopefully, you know, if you've got a home mortgage that's anything sizable, you've got young children that you want to provide for, you know, you may have some education costs down the line. Insurance is a very important thing for young, growing families, working people, for disability insurance. But as you pay down those debts, as you pay off your home mortgage, and you really don't have those larger expenses hanging over your head, it may be time to look at, hey, with what we're paying, if you're still paying a premium, if you know, hopefully, if you've got a permanent type of insurance policy where you've been able to maybe build up a good size of a cash value that can help defray the cost of that increasing insurance, you can look and weigh your options and, hey, am I better off not using this premium, because do I really need that life insurance benefit? Now, we'd all love to leave a large life insurance benefit to our loved ones and family, but it's really not out there to make the next generation well off. It's mm-hmm. really there for true protection against, you know, unforeseen, unmanageable events.
You know, Susan, there's a host of expenses that we all have, and I think we sometimes underappreciate what we spend. And I think there's some expenses, Chris, that you can kind of take a look and toss overboard, as they say. And maybe one of the easiest way to do that is if you go through your checking account or credit card statements with a spouse, and maybe circle those costs, you might be able to cut some of those things, Chris. And I think
I cut Netflix yesterday. I was very proud.
Well, I mean, that's $100+ dollars a year at least.
And we weren't watching it enough.
And I think, Chris, those are kind of things that I think that this is relating to, that you can go through and say, okay, here's what we're spending. Do we really use that?
Well, yeah, and I think just to kind of piggyback on our credit card discussion from earlier, there's a lot of things that you sign up for that have automatic renewals that, you know, don't seem like much at the time. But when you start to add all those things together without, you know, and you may not notice it month in and month out, but when you step back and look, hey, we're really spending some sizable dollars that we could either be putting into a savings, a retirement plan at work, that, you know, it's a helpful exercise. It's one that, you know, I think gets overlooked because people don't, well, I just, if I don't look at it, I don't realize how much the impact is. I mean, the idea of what people spend for coffee, you know, and then they extrapolate that out $5 a day,
right,
5 days a week, 52 weeks a year. You know, you look at that and say, well, if I just stop one thing, will that make a long-term impact? So, yeah, I think looking at all your expenses
absolutely
is important.
And while we're on that vein, Susan, before we take a break, you can track expenses fairly easily. And, you know, I think you can do it in about 5 minutes a month. One of the things that you can do, I think you look at your retirement and really Chris, it is a balance between your income, your assets, and your spending. And the spending is the one thing that you can identify rather quickly. So if you kind of go through your bank statement at the end of the month, and you can see pretty much on your, you know, what your spending is. And if you, you know, you take that number, and I think that's a number that you guys really take a look at, what those, what your consumption is on an annual basis.
Right. It's really the key driver of any financial plan, because you could have the most beautifully laid out 401k portfolio. You can be deferring into it. You can be saving what seems like a lot of money. But if you're spending more than that, it really doesn't matter. So
right.
Really getting a handle on getting that spending-saving balance is important.
All right. Well, we do have to get a handle on the clock. We'll be back with more retirement checklist points that you need to know so you can save a fortune for your retirement with Kingston Wealth Management after this.
When you.
It is 10 minutes before 11 o'clock. Still got a couple of minutes left for Kevin Kingston's favorite people in the world, John Rudy and Chris Rudy from Kingston Wealth Management. I know he wishes he could be with us today, but he's apparently on the wedding train.
He's getting ready to go to a wedding with his family. And so
another thing to put into your retirement funding plans. How many weddings will I have to participate in?
Absolutely.
In this lifetime, or possibly pay for?
You know, Susan, first of all, I want to mention to folks, too, if you're interested. I know your listeners have really taken advantage of this, but Chris and Mike have been real busy, and Kevin with calls after the show from folks who want to have you guys, Chris, go over maybe what they've got, what they're holding, what they're invested in. You guys kind of give them a little bit of a quick half hour, 45 minute overview at no cost. And it really is a good way to kind of track where you're at, see if you're on track, see if you're doing the things. And I think you've had some folks come away with it, but thanks to your listeners who are always out there. And I think they're taking advantage more so now than ever. We've had probably more calls in the last 6 months, and we've always had a good number, but I think folks are out there.
Well, we needed to get the message across that you can afford Kingston Wealth Management.
Yeah, and that's right. And now that we've been here with you guys almost 11 years, people are getting to know our voices, so that's a good thing.
Are you getting picked up at the grocery store? Hey, aren't you that guy on the radio?
Sometimes people recognize your voice out there, but anyway.
Tell me about how to save money.
You know, one of the things that people think about with their home, you know, it's a nice idea to think you can pay for your home, own your own home, not necessarily a bad thing. But Chris, there's some things you have to also look at that in terms of what the overall cost of operating that home can be. And in some cases, it might make sense for folks to look at a rental option, maybe take some of the equity out of their home and do some other things with it.
Yeah, I mean, I think not eliminating all of your options, as you point out. So if you've had a larger family, but now everybody's gone and you're left with a large house that takes a lot to upkeep for, you know, air conditioning, heating, power, you name it, and then the, you know, mowing the lawn. If those things aren't important to you, you can't get around or do those things quite as well, you pointed out maybe selling the larger home, taking a little bit of the proceeds, using for longer-term savings potentially towards health expenses, and identifying a place that maybe takes care of a lot of those things that you either can't or don't want to do anymore is a good option.
I think one of the other things that's very important that these folks do, too, in those meetings is they really take a look at all your retirement options or what you have available to you. Maybe it's a pension. Maybe it's looking at factoring in Social Security, looking at other assets, deciding, Chris, where to maybe take first. You know, if you've got some assets out there, that's a step that everybody really needs to look at.
Yeah, you got to look at everything from all your sources of income, and you obviously start with the fixed income pieces. So for some people, that's Social Security, pension, if you have that, especially if you're in a public sector employee, those are where they're most prevalent. And then you work back from there. Well, you know, now this gets us so far to our projected spending, so now we're going to have to take so much per year from supplemental places like IRA, 401k.
Last but not least, and I'll just touch on it quickly, is sometimes you have to bridge that gap. Sometimes when you leave a job, you take a look at your income, you take a look at your expenses, you see what your Social Security could provide. And there are folks, Chris, that are out there that take advantage of a great working environment like here in Bloomington Normal. Maybe they can work 15, 18, 20 hours a week if they like it. Maybe it's in a completely different thing. Sometimes that just does the trick to get you over that hump.
Yeah, opportunity for a second career of your choice. Maybe it's not something that you feel like you have to do, a place that's got flexible hours. But as I pointed out, if you're retiring anywhere before 65 from your first career, I'll say, you're probably going to need to identify some place for either health benefits or supplemental income to pay for an individual insurance plan.
And once you get to that full retirement age, you don't have that that as much of a crippling penalty from the IRS by virtue of taking Social Security at a younger age and trying to work where I think you pay back $2 for every dollar you earn, something of that nature. And then it gets a lot easier when you get to full retirement age.
Gentlemen, we're at the clock, so tell us how they can get in touch and make those phone calls after the show.
Yeah, call us at 663-9477, make an appointment, or you can look at KingstonWealthManagement.net. Got a lot of good info on there as well.
And we'll talk to you both next week.
Thanks,
here on WJBC. Securities offered through Valmark Securities, Inc., member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advisory services offered through Valmark Advisors, Inc., an SEC-registered investment advisor. Kingston Financial Group, Incorporated is a separate entity of Valmark Securities, Inc. and Valmark Advisors, Inc., and past performance does not guarantee future results.
Relying on one financial advisor to be an expert in everything and provide service for all your financial needs is unrealistic. For this reason, Kingston Wealth Management uses a team approach to financial planning. Our highly credentialed professionals will partner with you to create the custom strategies you and your family need to help obtain your financial and personal goals. When appropriate, we involve multiple members of our team to participate in client meetings. This approach not only better ensures thorough planning insight, it also provides you with more than one perspective. Several studies have shown that individuals and families who plan properly, are disciplined to follow it, will have a better opportunity for a positive financial outcome. Call the professionals at Kingston Wealth Management today at 663-9477 and set up your free, no-obligation appointment. Kingston Wealth Management, your planning team.
Securities offered through Valmark Securities, Inc., member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advisory services offered through Valmark Advisors, Inc., an SEC-registered investment advisor. Kingston Wealth Management, Inc. is a separate entity from Valmark Securities, Inc. and Valmark Advisors, Inc.